All right, I'm just going to start. I picked a beat that was taking too long to drop in. So, abort mission.
What was that?
We are here.
What was that?
That's old Scottish wild style bonus beats. I don't know. It was taking too long. We got to do this because we dragged this out. It's late Sunday. We're doing the You Stole It All, Give It Back podcast. I am BP Potterson. The guy who dragged it out and is guilty is...
It's Nick. It's none other than...
Yeah. All right. So, are you ready? Are we actually doing this?
Yeah.
All right. We have the last poets are back. They got something to say about... Hold on.
'Cause the white man's got a God complex. Hey, brother, what's your sport?
So that's what's going down.
I like having them in here. Like, they create context. You know? It's good to... It's good that they bring everything down a bit. You know what I mean? Like, don't get too high on your knight in shining armor.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think that vibe also is illustrated very much so in the album we're doing this week, which is Annika, and the album is called Annika.
So, I like the emphasis on the "eh."
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how she says it, or that's what I imagine.
Yeah, that's how she says it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and assume that, even though, I've just heard her voice on this. So what was it like listening to this album the whole week?
It's different from almost any other album that I've been listening to. Basically, it's an interesting choice of like instruments that they choose. It's like these 80s sci-fi sounds, really really cool bass lines too, and it stays in like low tone and just bounces on that tone, like it just teases with the bass, you know. And the lyrics are all great.
Yeah, well, we should specify that most of the album are covers.
Right.
Yeah, like one is Twinkle, I think that's how you pronounce it. She was like a big deal in England in the 60s. She was like a pop star. Then there's a Yoko Ono cover. There's a couple others. I don't remember who it is. And there's also a Bob Dylan cover. Yeah. And the Kinks.
And the Kinks, right.
Did you knew it was the Bob Dylan just from listening to the song?
No. I read it somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was expecting. So that's why I'm going to tell you the fact that you couldn't identify it on the album means that you're not listening to enough Bob Dylan.
The judgment. The judgment is flowing through you right
Heavy
now.
Heavy judgment. I mean, that's like a classic Bob Dylan album. So that means you're not even doing like your rudimentary Bob Dylan.
No, I slacked. Ridiculous. I slacked a long time ago with him, and I haven't gone back. I'm wrong. I'm all wrong about that. I admit it.
Yes. He's literally Bob Dylan.
All right. Back to Annika.
All right.
Back to Annika. So how would you describe the sound? Like, if you had to take, all right, you know, this genre with that genre with this band with that band, like, how would you break her down?
I mean, one thought I had is that it's like the most hip hop an album you could be without being hip hop. Like, that was my thing.
Yeah.
Like, she's not rapping. It's not hip hop. But I mean, as far as like the attitude and the vibe and the sound, to me, it's very much hip hop. And just the fuck everything of it.
Well, it's very Public Enemy without the specificity. She doesn't, you know, everything is just very vague and ominous. Whereas Public Enemy will be like, no, it's all about this governor who passed this law, and now they're sending the kids in the street to the private prisons, and it, like, it's real specific things he speak, you know.
Yeah.
Where she's just like, no, a very unknown system is on your neck.
Yeah, like, it's very political, but it's more just like the eternal, just the struggle of the system and bureaucracy. And
yeah,
like, you, like, it would be just like, it would be timely at any time.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's which Kafka.
Would, probably just saying Orwell. Probably just saying timeless would have been in a better way.
Yeah, it's you know, I get some Orwell, a little bit of Kafka in there, you know, with the vibe.
Oh, I had a very very specific Radiohead thought. Do you want to hear
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what choice do you have? So, there's so obviously in Radiohead, one of the big lines, like, in the concert, as far as like an anti-government line, probably the biggest one they have is in No Surprises, when he says, "Bring down the government, they don't speak for us."
Right.
But I think a much more effective line in this album is, "I know how the system works, and it doesn't."
Yeah, and it doesn't.
I mean, obviously,
that is perfect.
You really need to drop in her saying it, because, you know, me saying it wasn't nearly as effective, but
I probably won't. I'm gonna let you just hang out there. No,
you got it right.
No, listen, she that was one of the most perfect lines. I was gonna say the same thing. Like, that's one of those lines that sticks out. Like, that was one. Like, listening to the album throughout the last couple weeks, there's a lot of lines that just stick with you. That's one of them. You know, obviously for me the most it's not obvious, but the line from that stuck out for me is "Stop looking over your shoulder because no one's there." Like, just the way it's delivered, I think that's also the best moment on the album.
I mean, do you mean just that chorus in general?
Yeah,
or
just,
do you mean
just
like
how she delivers that line is my favorite part of the album. Like, I like hearing that the most, you know?
Yeah. That's good.
It's good. It's really good. And it's, you know, like, the thing about the music is it has, like, almost like a surfer and punk. It's like surfer, punk, and reggae combined in a really cool way.
Yeah.
Especially on Officer.
Well, hold on.
Officer.
Going back to No One's There.
Okay.
That line. Do you think that means more like you're paranoid and you have no, and it does, like, you have no reason, like, what do you think is behind that line? Like, I can never decide, like, what the context is for that line.
For me, well, you know, like, I came up with these, a lot of these songs made me come up with images in my head. And so I came up with kind of like a music video for a few of these songs.
Okay.
So, like, the idea behind "Stop looking over your shoulder because no one's there," I got the image of a guy in, like, a real dark room, and he's on a computer, and he's at home, but also sometimes, like, lightning flashes, and all of a sudden he's in the middle of a field by himself, but it's during a storm. So, like, during that part where she says "stop looking over your shoulder," obviously he's looking over his shoulder. But I guess the main thing is that it goes back and forth with him, like, he's, like, on the computer tweeting, like, these infatuated notes to some hot, you know, a famous person, and also tweeting hateful things to a different famous person. That's all I really thought of for that one.
Oh, okay.
But for the most part, it was "you're being paranoid."
Okay. And so basically the song was just like a manifestation of his loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah. But that's just one way I took it. Like, it could be taken a couple of different ways, I guess. How'd you take it?
I mean, I took it as sort of, most of the time I took it as, Like you think you're paranoid that someone's looking over your shoulder, but really you would rather someone be watching you and be paranoid than to actually have to deal with just total isolation. That's how I took it.
Yeah, that it could definitely go that way. Yeah. There's no right or wrong way, I think, for us, for the listener, you know?
Really, whatever we decide is
right. Exactly.
But, I'm starting to feel like a soundtrack to someone being medicated sort of a thing. I do feel like that's what we're describing.
It could go in that direction. I mean, listen, these songs could easily be in some movie about someone in a loony bin or something.
I could see that. And also, I think this is like the best Bob Dylan cover, but I'm sure there are people that know more about Bob Dylan that would disagree.
It's the best one I've heard.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Is
there anything like familiar about some of these melodies?
Well, the big thing is that it's the same guy. She's basically being backed up by a band called Beak, which is one of the main guys in Beak, is one of the main people in Portishead. So there is sort of
The guy who produces the beats, right? Geoff Barrow?
Yeah. One of my questions was, is this more Portishead than Portishead, do you think?
In some ways, I think like that kind of, there's a lot of space in these songs, like, for the singer to kind of move around in. And I think that's why they put such a hard echo on her voice. But as far as like being more Portishead than Portishead, I mean, you can't be more Portishead than Portishead, right?
Wrong. You can be, and this is.
That's the answer. Okay.
Yeah, that's the answer. Because I think, I think Portishead is great. Obviously the big difference is that in Portishead you have Beth Gibbons, who's, you know, an amazing singer. Annika isn't sort of a singer in that conventional sense.
Right.
But I think she sort of manifests the lyrics in an amazing way. And I like the way her voice is almost more ghost than human, like the way she's sort of like just like fading in and out.
And what's the accent do for it?
Oh, you hear an accent?
On her voice? Are you kidding me?
What do you mean, like a British accent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I really wasn't that aware of it, though, okay. I gotta say. Were you were aware of the British accent as you were listening?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times when you hear a British singer, there won't be a noticeable accent. To me, it's very noticeable, and I think it's pretty cool. Like the way she, like that one song, Yang Yang.
Yeah, the Yoko Ono cover.
Yeah, she doesn't even pronounce it Yang Yang though. She's saying like Yum Yum.
I think that's how Yoko Ono pronounces it too. So.
Yeah, all right. Well, there you go. So she's doing the British justice. I don't know. To me, it was very noticeable. But I guess to you, it didn't really play a role in.
No, I guess that would add to the effect of it being sort of ghostly, just because, like, you know, British accents, I associate with like older times. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, people with British accents sound old timey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that old English, you know, we started civilization in the white sense of of conquistadors, you know.
And if you don't put on these pants right now, we're going to shoot you kind of thing.
Right. Wait, who's putting on? They want to put on pants.
I mean, I'm just saying that. I think that was a big thing. Like, they would come over and it'd be like, oh, you're making us feel, you know, it was all like a penis envy thing. It was like, all right, we can't handle you people if we got to see your junk. Like, you got to put these pants on. And if you don't, we're going to get really mad about it and we're going to start shooting people.
So they're going up to black people and saying, like, that feather and leaf isn't covering enough of you down there.
Yeah.
Put here's make, some bigger clothing.
Yeah, it's making me uncomfortable.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about too.
Yeah. So can I just give a shout out to Hal? I mean, you first heard the album through me, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Right. Whenever it came out, I think you put me onto it.
Yeah. I mean, well, no, it was probably later than that because I didn't get into it at first. At first, I went to Other Music. Shout out to Other Music. It's not there anymore, and the city isn't complete without it.
Right.
That's my But I went in there and they were playing it, and it was a 7-inch, and I thought it sounded amazing in the store. It was a 7-inch of No One's There. Mm. So then I bought it, and then when I brought it home, for some reason, like at home, for at least like 2 or 3 years, I would like play it, you know, a couple times a year, and it never sounded as good as it did in the store. And then I sold it, and then I got the album, and then somehow the album really clicked for me.
Yeah, why is that? Why do some albums sound different in the store, like where you're buying it from? Like, why do you get excited at first and the excitement doesn't quite carry all the time?
I mean, you know, I think in the store, like you walk in, it's, you know, there's a vibe to it. And I don't know, it just made sense in the store. But then at home, it was just sort of sounded weird to me. I could never sort of get into the vibe. And then somehow with the album, it sort of like builds to like, oh, yeah, I'm there.
Right.
I just think... Yeah, I don't think that these tracks isolated are as good as they are together.
Yeah, that's a good point. This has a good overall just, and it's only what, 9 songs or 8?
Oh yeah. I guess flows technically really it's well. 8 because yeah, at the end it's just a dub version. I mean, it's amazing, but it's a dub version of the Masters of
War
song.
Yeah, right. Right. Which still which, sounds which I good. Would And that kind of shows and like that there was a big reggae influence on this album.
Yeah.
It's pretty which, obvious on every song. You get like the hard like echo on the snare drum, you know, and yeah, it's just like immediately you hear that. What is it? It's almost like instead of a specific drum instrument, they put like water dropping. Or something, or it kind of sounds like water dropping, but that's like to a rhythm.
Yeah. Well, it's like that reggae thing of like, yeah, just putting like weird echoes on the sound.
Right.
And also specifically, I think, and you're referring to the same thing, we're talking about like sort of like old school, like 70s reggae.
Yes, not dance hall.
Yeah. I mean, because yeah, that early 70s reggae is just like nothing else touches it. It's amazing.
Who do you have a favorite 70s reggae band or artist?
That'd be pretty tough.
Top 3?
I mean, top 3 would probably be Toots and the Maytals.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, I do Heptones and I mean, obviously sort of like all the different incarnations of Lee Scratch Perry.
Right.
That would be like yeah, but if I think about it later and I realize that wouldn't be the 3, I'm gonna be very upset.
I mean, I can't see going wrong with the 2 you named. I mean, Toots and the Maytals is just like you go to any kind of bar that's trying to be cool, like that has a jukebox. They have Toots and the Maytals.
Yeah. 5446 was my number. So, do you remember which song has the line "I will love you to the day I die"? I think. I think that's "I Go to Sleep."
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's "I Go to Sleep," and I just love it in that song. The way she says it, it's sort of completely genuine. That was the thought I had. She says, "I will love you to the day I die." It's completely genuine. And not the least bit reassuring, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just like, yes, you will have this love, but ultimately that will not be enough.
That's another thing. Like, what's the deal with like the apocalypse? and the end of the world, literally the end of the world going on. Like, everything is hopeless on this album to a certain extent, like on the cover. Like, on, like, take it for face value as far as like the name of the song and some of the lyrics. And a lot of this is pretty, you know, dim.
Yeah. But I mean, I get what you're saying, but I always find it like reassuring because I also think there's like a sense of humor about it.
Right.
And there's a very, I don't know, I come away with like, yes, it's all hopeless, but so what? Fuck it. Like, so.
Like, do any lyrics stand out to you?
I mean, that one, I mean, yeah, that was the only ones I had. I mean, I think all the lyrics are pretty great. I mean, I also just think the way she sings it is even more affecting than the lyrics. I mean,
yeah, like on Yang Yang, she, like at the end, doesn't she sound like a robot giving people instructions to join the revolution? Like, join the revolution.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. I can hear that.
You know, obviously I'll dub it over so people get the full effect.
And also I really like the piano in Terry. Like, it was all these murky sounds and all of a sudden it's like this very, like, almost barroom, very clear pianos, you know, that comes through. I thought that was really good.
Oh, there was something else about Terry. What was it? That was one of those songs where I just found it like very familiar, like the melody, not because it was a cover, but the way like she's delivering it. She has that, like, it's almost like that really, like, you know, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. What is that melody that I'm thinking of?
Are you thinking of like that, there's like a Christmas song?
Yeah. What is it? Little Drummer Boy is what Julia tells me. It sounds different, you know. Like that was one of those different songs. But I like Terry. That's a cool song. That's a great starter too for an album.
Yeah, and it really shows like the range of like how it's gonna fluctuate between being sort of like very classical, melodic, and just being completely discordant,
right,
and weird.
Yeah, it's bugged out. Like, it sets the pace for a real bugged out journey, you know, like a short bugged out journey.
Yeah.
Know?
I thought the drums at the end of I Go to Sleep kind of reminded me of like Sigur Rós. I don't know if you thought that.
No, I can see that. I didn't pick up on that, but I think you're right. Yeah.
It's sort of like pounds away.
Yeah, it's hard. Right. That pop, 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 pop. Right. Yeah. No, you're right. I agree with that. It was something familiar about that. Yeah. What about anything coming out of like any sounds or instruments that came out of left field for you? Like they don't seem like part of the, you know, formula really, but they fit.
I mean that was the thing I liked about this album is that, yeah, everything sort of seemed in place and everything sort of seemed out of place at the same time. And it was just sort of like, it almost sounds like found sounds. Like, I mean, it just, I mean, at times it sounds like they're just like bashing against things in a room. And also I really liked the line between like what was a live instrument, what was sort of like computer sounds was completely annihilated. They were all just sort of like going over each other and going through each other at will.
Yeah, that's true. I think a good example of that is on End of the World. It almost reminded me of Jimi Hendrix when he did that like deconstructed national anthem. Like the vibe of it, you know what I mean? Like it's just that crazy distorted guitar and like it sounds like they're not trying to play it well. Like they're just trying to distort the hell out of it. And they just figured out, you know, like these things that a distortion pedal can do to the sound overall. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good. And also, I sent you a question before we did this. Did you have time to think about it?
Oh, shoot. Well, go ahead.
That's a no. That's a no.
I did. But ask it anyways.
Okay, so my thing was, I mean, I really like this album, and I think, I would classify this as pretty close to, if I had to choose an album that was like most in line with like my default mood, this would probably be the album. Because I just felt like,
but the that more, wasn't the question.
No, that wasn't the question. I'm going all over the place. So that's my plan. So then, the question was, because I just think that it's like very unaffected, very uncontrived album, and it sort of reminds me of almost like a blues album from like 30s, where it's like, you know, somebody that is singing like no one's ever going to hear it, and there's almost like an intimacy to it, and it sort of reminded me of that, and you know, being that, you know, you've listened to way more old blues than me, I was wondering what you thought.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It sounds very natural, like there's a freedom to it. And you said like no one may hear it or not, like one of these guys who were just performing, and then Alan Lomax came around and was doing his recordings and found, you know, Mississippi John Hurt or something like that.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's known. So, but he was playing before as if he may not get known. So he's able to kind of just be free and natural with, you know, the rhythm, the melody, you know, with singing, and not really worry about whether or not the voice is good enough, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what you're going for? That's kind of what you mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. Just... No, I agree. It's I don't know if it's the most closest thing to the blues that I've heard as far as being natural.
But it's up there.
It's got to be up there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying for someone, I mean, I'm just saying that like they're getting as close to someone as you hear in any album in this modern age to getting to that level of sort of not intimacy, but just sort of like unselfconsciousness.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I get that. I get that from there. It sounds like a totally free album.
What do you think?
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. What do you think of the vocal sample at the end of Masters of War? I guess it sounds like a soldier talking about.
Yeah. What was that? It confused me at first because I was on the train, and I was like, I had to take my earphone off. Like, am I hearing this wrong? I didn't remember that from the first time I listened to it. You know.
Oh, what, you thought like somebody next to you was saying it or something?
Or it was like an announcement or something. Oh,
okay.
You know what I mean?
That would be a fucking amazing announcement on a subway. That would be incredible. It sort of reminded me of a little of another thing you're really into, Godspeed. It almost sounded like a sample that would be in a Godspeed.
Yeah,
song.
like those, right, those live recordings that they got
and
put in their songs. Yeah, that's a good call.
We're referring to Godspeed, You Black Emperor, for those at home.
Godspeed You exclamation point Black Emperor.
Yeah, I mean the exclamation point shifts, but that's a whole other podcast. And also, I think it's really cool because it has that vocal sample, which, you know, usually would sort of engender some sort of like, oh, what political thing should happen, and then, or you know, or depression or anything, and then it goes right into probably the best beat in the album, No One's There. And it's just sort of it just like turns the page immediately. It's like, whatever, moving on. So I thought that was pretty awesome. Right. So what would you rank this album as? Like, is this like a top 50 album for you? Is it a top 20? Would it even be on the list?
It might make the list. It would make the list. I don't know. I can't think offhand, like, top whatever. I have a lot of, you know, albums that I've... I mean, just 90s rap in general. That would be pretty tough to... I don't know. My answer is I put it top 70, but it could be fluctuated. I don't know.
Okay. I think it might be in my top 10. I decided that this week.
Top 10?
I think this sounds great. I just really like this. It's great. It worked every time I was playing it. It's, you know, and I remember the last time I really got into it, I got really into it. And I'm going to be playing this album for a while. It's good stuff.
Okay, so are you ready? Are you ready to be a little angered?
I always am ready to be angry.
Okay. So I'm going to go with Julia, my woman, her opinion. I put it on in the car.
Okay.
How do you think that went?
That did not go well.
It didn't go well at all. It probably went worse than how you might think it would have gone. Like, she wanted me to take it off immediately. She couldn't stand her voice. She said the instruments sounded like some, because she, you know, like, this is in all fairness to her. She, she'll listen to the top 40 stuff when there's nothing else going on, she's getting ready or what, but she's not into that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, the stuff I play for her, she gets into, but she's not into music like we are in general.
Yeah.
So when something comes on that she really doesn't like, she'll let you know. And that's never really happened. Like, I never put anything on. She was like, oh, take that off immediately. Like, she couldn't stand it. She said, she was trying to make excuses like, oh, it's making the baby cry more or something. I was like, these babies just
I mean, A, why is that a bad thing? And
you got to think about making that baby cry. But anyways, you know, I thought her opinion was probably more in line with the majority.
Well,
especially women. What do you think?
Do you think
there's a good portion of people who wouldn't be into Annika?
I mean, yeah, I think you got to listen to a lot of music to be like, it's not something that somebody that doesn't listen to a lot of weird music is going to be into.
You have to become accustomed to all sorts of different music in order to allow it, you know, and accept it as like something that you can listen to and enjoy, like the vibe that person's trying to set, like to appreciate the art. If you don't listen to enough of a variety, I think it's really difficult to wrap your head around some things like Annika.
And also, I think the thing we were talking about of how unselfconscious it is and how it doesn't care who's listening is really at odds with the way most people hear music. Most people hear music as, what is this person trying to do? How is this person trying, or how is this group trying to hook me in? So when they hear music that's just like, yeah, I don't give a fuck about you, I think it's very unsettling for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. I heard Chuck D, he was doing this interview, and he said, you know, I used to make music that would piss off my girlfriend. So I don't necessarily think that's what Annika was going for, to piss off like women in general or a boyfriend or whatever. But I think she was kind of going for something. Just like, listen, I know you're not going to get this. Now, I know all of you aren't going to get this, but this is the thing I need to get off. I need to give this out to the world. Whoever picks it up, great. If you don't, all right. You know?
Yeah. So anybody that doesn't like it, just it's not for you.
It's not for you. So it's not like this album. You have to be into music. You have to listen to all different kinds of music in order for this to be like received, you know, by your eardrums properly.
So just in conclusion, you know, I'm sorry that Julia didn't like it. And, you know, you've known me how long enough to know how not genuine that sorry was.
perfect.
So yeah, thank you, Annika, for a great album. And we're not going to do shout outs this week. I have a theory that I wanted to say to Nick and just see what he thought of it.
Okay.
So at work, we like share cars, and there's like a couple people at work now where, you know, I'll get in the car and it'll be like tuned to like country radio stations, like modern country radio stations. And so I asked you about this before. You said you really don't know what I'm referring to, like this music. So you haven't really heard
anything. I don't know anything about modern country. I know old country music.
Yeah, before I say this, like I what old country do you like?
What's my guy who's the great storyteller?
I mean, I know you've gone through like a Johnny Cash phase.
Well, but I went more through like, what's this guy's name? Is it Johnny Horton?
I mean, I know you put me onto like that Marty Robbins album.
Marty Robbins, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Like Marty Robbins, I think he's just songwriting. I think he's one of the best, period. Yeah. I think he's amazing. And there's a few others, but like I kind of like the stuff, the country I've gone for is like all lyrics. Like the lyrics have to be amazing. I can't think of too many.
And it's pretty much,
you know, it's pretty much all old. The sound caught me.
And it's pretty much all old country.
Yeah, it's all old. Right.
Yeah,
right.
I feel like the same way.
The new country just sounds like it's the same thing to me as like top 40 pop. Like it's like if it comes on, I you know it could be, you know, just the latest crap. I don't really care for it, you know. So what happened in the car?
Well, I like, you know, old country as well. So the thing about this new country, it's like hyper, it's, you know, it's very white. It's very white, and it almost, I mean, it has like no rhythm to it. It's like not at all funky to the point where it's like almost like they're actively like trying not to be funky or rhythmic. So my big theory is, I guess you could guess where I'm going with this.
No.
All right, modern country music is racist, and anyone who listens to it is sort of like a racist. It's like racist fun. Well,
but your reason is that it's intentionally to not have rhythm?
I mean, my reasoning is that it's like intentionally to sort of experience music that is sort of bereft of any influence of people of color. Like it's like hyper, like I think the enjoyment of it comes from it being like hyper white and not having to think about or acknowledge in any way like colored people's contribution to music or the contribution of minorities. I want to include like, you know, Latin people and everything, not just black.
Yeah.
Because like even the country music, like the old country music I like, you could hear the influence of like, you know, blues artists and everything. Like it wasn't just this like hyper.
Well, they were next door neighbors. It was literally like the other side of the train tracks. It was blues on one side and then it was country, and there would be some overlapping.
Yeah. And
you know, like you like the blues would take some of the storytelling styles of the country. The country would take some of the rhythms from the blues, and even some of the way they would sing their melodies.
Yeah, but the thing I'm saying is just, and I don't know how much people are aware of it. Like, I don't think that they're sitting there thinking like, oh, I'm so glad I don't hear any Lead Belly in this. But
right.
But I just think it's a lot of that thing with white people when they don't want to sort of deal with racial issues. And I think it's sort of like it's like basically the musical manifestation of that, of like, I don't even want to hear, you know, I want to be able to relax and having to think about, you know, minorities in any context. Even their musical influence is stressing to me, and I like music that doesn't stress me.
So what's the with the new country stuff? What's the topics?
Oh, I'm not. I've never even gotten far enough to listen to the lyrics. Like I'm not even saying that like topically. They're like what they're saying is inherently like anything. I just think like the musicality of
it. I miss a girl. I want a girl.
Yeah,
I miss
I'm just referring to like the musicality of it.
The musicality.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I think it just falls into the same category as all different pop music. Like, there's rap that has become pop. There's you know, soul music that's become pop. Why would country be any different? Country has become
pop. Yeah, but
I'm not referring to
I'm not referring to whether or not it's pop. I'm referring to whether or not it's racist.
All right. Whether the music is racist.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know what? Why don't we do this? Why don't you like listen to, like, you don't have to listen to a lot, but why don't you like listen to a country station a little bit over the
I'm not going to listen to a country. Give me an artist to look up. Do you know? Do you remember any of the artists?
No. You're gonna have to listen to a country station. You're gonna do this. You don't even have to listen to a lot. Like over the next 2 weeks, if you cumulatively listen to an hour, that would be enough for this.
Right.
So that's agreeable, right?
Yeah. All right. I'll do that, and I'll get back.
So
to you
can spread an hour over the next 2 weeks, and then on the next episode, you can tell me whether or not I'm right.
Jesus.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be an hour. Christ. If it was like, if you get up to 45 minutes, as long as you listen to like maybe a half a dozen songs on that radio station and then just get back to us on it.
Somehow modern country has creeped into You Stole It All, Give It Back podcast. Not for the good.
I mean, I really need, because, you know, I can't say this, that, you know, you're the only person I could get to do this. So you're going to have to do it.
Yeah. All right. So, okay, that's what I'll do. I'll listen to it, a country station. I'll figure out a radio station that plays it, and I'll have it on there. And occasionally I'll put it on when the baby's away, as to not scare her. Okay. All right. I'll give it a shot.
So,
and I'll get back to
just
you on the
six
show.
Songs in the next 2 weeks. That's okay. All I'm asking.
That sounds like a lot.
All right.
I may not make it to the second verse.
All right. So you want to pick an album for the next episode?
Well, so no recommendations?
No. We're skipping that. We're long on time. Let's go. I mean, is there something you need to recommend to our three listeners?
Yeah. Funkier Than a Mosquito by Nina Simone. It's the shit. All right,
okay.
Let's go on to...
All right. I just like to say that I was the one that found that song. I got it on a Break CD compilation that I got in Brussels a long time ago. So.
Oh, nice. All right.
That's like my one traveling story. All right. So you got three choices. You want to hear them?
Okay.
You got Willy Bobo, Uno, Dos, Tres. You got the Kid soundtrack,
Folk Implosion.
Yes, it does. Or The Fall, Grotesque.
What's Willy Bobo?
He's.
I don't know that one.
I think you've listened to it. He's like a sort of Latin jazz funk guy from the 70s.
They're singing?
There's like vocals on like maybe one third of the songs, or maybe half.
So this is all just rhythm, percussion.
Yes.
Stuff like that?
Yes.
Funk?
Yes.
Is it funk and Latin?
Yes, both.
Mm.
I mean,
then it was The Fall was the other, and what was the it was the Kid soundtrack. Yeah. Willy Bobo.
All right, so we're doing Willy Bobo. All right.
Yeah. Was that your first choice?
I mean, I was sort of okay with any of them. I didn't have a first choice.
Okay.
All right, so in finishing up, I want to give a shout out to somebody that I know who passed away recently, and his name was Fred. He was a big music fan. He lent me an Emerson, Lake & Palmer record once, And the big thing about him is I work with his wife, and she tells me about how he still plays records. Well, he played records in his basement, like the ones he had like since the 70s. He liked like progressive rock, like Yes and Pink Floyd, and not progressive rock, but he also really liked the Beatles. And the big thing about him is I always remember Fred because he would like buy DVDs of groups, like their concerts, and when he would watch them at the end, he would clap. So every
in his house.
In his house. So every time I ever see like a concert on TV, I'll always think of Fred clapping. So
and you have to clap.
No, I'm not going there. But I appreciate that he was that enthusiastic that
he's into it.
Yeah, he was into it. So you know, unfortunately we lost, you know, a music fan, good guy.
Right.
Godspeed, Fred. And you know, that's the end of this one. Boom. All right, shut it off.